Imagine going to a website or walking into a retail store and everything you see is only $1. Impossible, right? Well, you might think so. But Dollar Tree will prove you wrong. Dollar Tree is the nation's number one destination for value shopping. All of their stores are well-lit and crammed with all kinds of hidden treasures. Dollar Tree offers a plethora of merchandise that includes many national and regionally trusted brands. It doesn't matter if you're looking for housewares, dinnerware, candy, snacks, stationery, or holiday needs. You're going to find it at Dollar Tree. You can shop at your hometown store or shop online for exclusive offers, manufacture closeouts, watch videos, and join their Value Seekers Club. On top of all that, you can have your order shipped for free directly to your local store. To visit DollarTree.com, click on the link in the show notes to let them know we sent you. Doing so helps keep our podcast going. Dollar Tree, where everything is only $1. Welcome to another edition of Everyone Has a Story. I am your host, Nate Wade. Hope everybody is having a fantastic week. We have Deborah Yates on the show today. She's an author. She wrote The Woman of Many Names about her seventh great grandmother, Nancy Ward, also known as Nenya He, among other names. She had ties to Daniel Boone, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, many people like that. So it's a fantastic story. Hope you stay tuned to listen to that. You won't regret it for sure. How's everybody's weeks going? I hope it's going fantastic. I spent a week outside loading pallets on the back of semi-trailers, about 27 semis all together. One day it was incredibly windy. The wind was blowing about 60 miles an hour. In fact, they shut down the interstates. The wind was blowing so hard, and we were where we're at, it's just dust. The whole parking lot is dirt, and so I was covered with dirt. In fact, I think I am still picking dirt out of my ears because of that day. It was terrible. We're trying to load the pallets in the back. We're going up this ramp outside, and the pallets are like tipping over. The wind is like pushing them over. It was not a fun, and it was a terrible experience. I just want to say we didn't get done until 8:30 that night, so we worked about 13 hours trying to get all of those semis loaded. But hey, it's fine. It is what it is, and we got paid overtime, so I'm not complaining too much. And now it is time for the three things that are making me happy this week. First one, number one, here for this week, John Wick. Yeah, you might ask, how is John Wick making me happy? Because it's a good movie. I'm telling you, we've seen it once already, but my daughter had not seen it. So we decided to watch it again this week for our Monday family night. And so we watched John Wick, and I'm telling you what, just the thing you'd walk away from in that movie is don't kill somebody's dog. Okay, just don't do it. I mean, it was sad. It was terrible. But it's a fun movie. It's an interesting movie. I mean, it's so weird to think maybe there's this underbelly of assassins running around New York City. They have their own hotels and their own code of honor that they live by. And I don't know. It's a fun movie. You know, Keanu Reeves is good in those kind of movies. I'm not sure he's necessarily the best actor in the world, but when it comes to action movies, he does a pretty good job, especially the ones where he doesn't have to talk very much in. How was that? Is that okay? I loved Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, okay? I thought he was a great actor in that. Come on now. Bill and Ted's is classic stuff. And I hear there's a new one. That would be amazing. I am so excited to see Bill and Ted's, even if they're going to be in their 40s or 50s. A new Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure would be right up my alley. That'd be awesome. Second thing making me happy this week, May the 4th. Yes, Monday was May the 4th. And of course, everybody who's a geek knows that May the 4th is Star Wars Day. That's right. May the 4th be with you, right? That's what it's supposed to say. And yes, I am a Star Wars geek. Maybe not as big as some, but definitely bigger than others. And one thing I did hear this week is that Taika Waititi has been pegged to direct one of the next coming up Star Wars movies. It's a standalone Star Wars. It won't be part of the Skywalker saga. But if you guys don't know who Taika Waititi is, he's pretty cool. He's done movies like What We Do in the Shadows. He also directed Jojo Rabbit, which is a fantastic movie. If you haven't seen that, you got to watch that. He's also directed the season finale of The Mandalorian on Disney Plus, and he has now been pegged to direct the new Star Wars movie. He said that he'll get fired about 30 minutes into the project, so we'll see if that actually stays true. I hope not, because I think Taika is an amazing talent, and he's got a weird way of looking at life, and he's a fantastic director. So I am totally excited about that new Star Wars movie coming out. And the third thing that is making me happy this week is Indian food. Yes, we had some Indian food last night. Trying to support our local businesses during the shutdown and try to keep them, making a little bit of money. So we ordered food from our local Indian restaurant, Tandoori Kitchen, and it was phenomenal. As always, I had the shrimp, what do they call it, the masala, the tikka masala. Oh, my gosh, so good, so good. So if you have the chance to order Indian food, if you've never had Indian food, I highly suggest it. It's full of curry, so it doesn't have, like, a lot of color per se, and so maybe sometimes it doesn't actually look that appetizing, but stick it in your mouth, and you will be blown away. Your taste buds will be happy, and they will praise you for the rest of their days. I'm just saying. All right. Okay, look, I got to get a little serious for just a minute because this has been bugging me. And I, you know, sometimes I get a little political in the show. I know that, and I try not to. I really do because I do believe that everybody has, you know, their own political beliefs, and that's fine and dandy. You can be conservative if you want. You can be a Democrat if you want. I really don't care. I'm friends with everybody, and I try to respect everybody's political opinions. But I think this goes beyond politics, and it goes beyond things like that, and delves into something that we all need to stand up for, and that is justice in this country. This week, you know, the video was put out there about the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, who was a black man who was jogging in Georgia and was basically ambushed, and for lack of a better word, and for all intents and purposes, he was lynched by two men, a father and son, who chased after him, and then a fracas ensued, and they shot him point blank. And then they went 2 months without being arrested because they claimed self-defense. If you watch the video, where's the self-defense? The person that should have been practicing self-defense was Ahmaud, not those men. And, you know, it's funny because you have all these people now that are trying to trace the background of Ahmaud and see if he was, you know, some sort of crook or criminal, or if he had some sort of seedy background or something like that. And no, the answer is no, he did not. He was out for a jog. And he got ambushed by a couple of white men. Okay, it is 2020, people. And this kind of thing should not happen in this country. And if you sit back and you say, well, he should have, you know, done this or done that, or he shouldn't have done that, or he shouldn't have been jogging in that neighborhood, then you're part of the problem. Because that's the type of attitude that gets black people killed. Why is it that we as white people have to still be their overlords, or think we are? Or that the moment we see a black person, we immediately think that they're up to no good. How is that a thing? And if you tell me you don't believe that, then search yourself, because I guarantee that even if you may not consciously think that, somewhere deep inside you may actually think that. And if you don't stand up for injustices like that, then you're part of the problem. I'm sorry. It's just the bottom line. And those people that have been out there in this country for the past few weeks protesting and going to their Capitol buildings with guns – and protesting that their liberties have been taken away because they can't go to their restaurant when they want to, or go to their beauty salon when they want to. Look, I totally understand that people are losing money and they're hurting and they're financially desperate. I get it. But if you go protest that and you don't say anything about what happened to this man, then you're part of the problem because you don't care about liberty. All you are is up there just pontificating about freedoms that you think you have, that you think have been violated. And this man loses his life because of one reason. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time and the color of his skin. That's it. That's the bottom line. So don't tell me about your freedoms that have been completely taken away from you, you know, that the government has overstepped its bounds. The government doesn't care about half of the population of this country, it seems like. And we need to start doing that. So I challenge you all to do something. Find some way to speak out against these injustices that happen, especially to African Americans in this country. And if you're a Christian, which I happen to be, so I'm going to speak to you now, Christian brothers and sisters. If you don't fight for injustice, then when you start talking about the cross, it means nothing. We won't listen. Nobody will listen because we have totally lost our testimony at that point in time. Being a Christian means speaking out for injustices. And if we don't do that, we are part of the problem. So God help us. God help us all. Ahmaud Arbery, rest in peace. And may this never happen again. And those of us who are white, we need to do something about it. Stop sitting back and pretending like nothing is happening. And pretending like these black people that keep on saying that racism still exists in this country, that they're just full of nonsense, that they have the same rights that we do, that they can make it the same way we can. You have special privileges given to you if you're white in this country. You may not see it. You may think you've struggled, and maybe you have. But ask yourself this question. When was the last time you walked down the street and you were worried about being assaulted by someone because they thought maybe you ripped off a house down the street because of the color of your skin and that's it? We don't worry about that half the time, especially not here, not in southeastern Idaho, where we're 95% white. So do something. Figure it out. Stop pontificating and go do something. Again, Ahmaud Arbery, rest in peace and family. I'm going to figure out something. I want to say I'll pray for you, and I will. But I'm going to do something else because I'm not going to just pray. I will find a way to be part of the solution. All right. Well, on that note, I had to get that off my chest, and hopefully you guys haven't tuned off by now. But we do, as I said, we have Deborah Yates on the show, and she is a Native American as well, and she wrote a book, again, called Woman of Many Names, and it's about her seventh great-grandmother, Nancy Ward, and she has, like I said, ties to George Washington and Daniel Boone, and she's got an amazing story. So I hope you guys thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy this conversation with me and Deborah Yates on Everyone Has a Story.
The Be Engaged and Inspired podcast, a new podcast with your host, myself, Kia, and
DJ Sam. That's me. With nearly 60 years of joint experience. Remember, every Wednesday, a new episode of the Be Engaged and Inspired podcast will help you navigate those tricky waters of planning a wedding or special event.
Listen to us on Apple and Google Play. Follow us on the Be Engaged and Inspired podcast Facebook group page. And remember that the Be Engaged and Inspired podcast is proud to be part of the Indie Blast podcast network.
Well, we are talking with Deborah Yates today, and she wrote a book entitled Woman of Many Names, and it is a story about her seventh great-grandmother, Nancy Ward, and she also has another name. I don't know if I'm even going to pronounce this right. Deborah, you can tell me if I can pronounce it right. Is it Nanyahi? I think is what I've got in front of me.
You're actually pretty close. It's Nanyahi.
Nanyahi. Okay. Is that like an Indian name, or what is that exactly?
Yes. Nancy Ward was a Cherokee American Indian, and she ran the region of, let's say, Knoxville.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty close to where her village was, of Chota.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, Deborah, let's talk just a little bit about you. Where did you grow up, and what was your childhood like, and that kind of stuff?
Well, I had a pretty wonderful childhood, actually. I was born and raised in Ohio, for the most part. My father was part of the natural gas industry. He was a welder. So we actually traveled from the time I was born until I was around 10 years old. We lived all over the eastern United States, following the gas, following the work.
Mm-hmm. But you would consider yourself an Ohioan? Is that how you would say that?
I would consider myself an Ohioan, absolutely.
Great, good deal. Yeah, I'm from Idaho, and so it's kind of funny because it seems like there's like three states that always get mixed up in people's minds. It seems like it's Idaho, yeah. Iowa, and Ohio always seem to get mixed up in everybody's minds.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we grow the corn, or we don't grow the corn, we grow the potatoes here. But
we're definitely Midwestern in Ohio.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, corn fed, that's what they used to say. We were corn fed.
Corn fed. That's good. So where exactly in Ohio? Do you live in Ohio now?
No, I currently reside in Florida. I moved to Florida about 10 and a half years ago. I was in the throes of a divorce and thought that I needed something different to look at and to be. So I'm actually living on the Gulf of Mexico in St. Pete Beach.
Oh, gotcha. Well, that's the weather's probably a lot nicer down there than it is in Ohio.
It's definitely much different weather.
Yeah.
I really like it a lot because we do see a change in the seasons around mid-state. So it's not cold like the northern part of Florida can get,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they can really get a little chilly up in the Panhandle area.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
But we aren't as warm as what, say, Naples and Miami are, but it's a beautiful area. You know, it comes with its risk. Every place does. You know,
yeah.
Here is hurricanes. Ohio is tornadoes.
Right, right. Yeah, Idaho, we just have a super volcano that we're sitting on around here. That's all in the Yellowstone area. That's about it.
Yeah.
But
I hope it doesn't blow in our lifetime. That's all I know.
Yeah, most of the scientists, if you want to believe them, they say we're still relatively far out, maybe a couple hundred thousand years before it actually does anything significant. So that's good. So right now we don't have a lot of natural things that we worry about. We have some earthquakes and things like that. We do have some pretty terrible winters around here on occasion. But yeah, we just kind of do our thing and grow our potatoes around here. That's all we do.
Yeah. Well, each part of the country has its own uniqueness and something to offer that the rest of the country doesn't.
That's true.
Part of the diversity of our country, I'd say. I mean, it's a wonderful place to live.
It is. It is.
We're all mud. There you go.
For sure. For sure. So let's talk a little bit about what got you interested in finding out a little bit more about your ancestry. Was it your grandmother Nancy, or was it something else?
Actually, it was Nancy Ward and my grandfather. My family grew up not knowing and or speaking about whichever part of the family you were in, our Native Americanness. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was raised in Oklahoma. He lived in the territory of the Cherokee Territory out there. He called it the reservation. Now they don't call it that. They call it something a little bit different now. The nation is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where he grew up, and he grew up very poor. His mother died when he was a little boy, and his father disappeared right afterwards. There was, I believe, 12 children from the ages of 21 to about 6-7 years old.
Wow.
And after my great-grandmother died, my great-grandfather fell into the throes of alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
He disappeared for, you know, a couple decades, I believe it was.
Oh, wow.
And when I asked my grandfather about his mother and father, he told me that they that his mother died and that his father died right after that. And come to find out, that wasn't exactly truthful. But in his heart, when his father abandoned him, he was dead.
Hmm.
So he was out there, you know, in the 20s, the 1920s, and things weren't so good there. The Spanish flu had just come through and wiped out, you know, thousands of the Cherokee and the Creek, and, you know, that virus hit that area very, very hard.
Right.
And he had a sister that lived in Florida, and an older sister that was married, and she wanted him to come and live with her to help with bills and so on and so forth. So he moved to Florida when he was 12 and, started working in the fields of Florida, you know, harvesting whatever crops were available. And then he became a truck driver, and then he met my grandmother, who had run away from an orphanage at 13 years old.
Hmm.
And, he ran into her about a year or so after she had ran away from there. And they got married. They were both young. My grandmother was very young. And that's how we started our journey into white America.
Wow.
So it was, back in the early days, in the early part of the 1900s, being a Native American was not a desirable thing.
Right.
So, especially when they moved to Ohio and nobody knew who they were, basically, they decided they weren't going to tell anybody that Grandpa was Cherokee Indian. And he was approximately half-blooded. And you know, at that point, he became a white man. Every legal document he signed as white. He joined the military as a white man. Because even back then, if you were American Indian, you couldn't vote.
Oh.
I believe the American Indians got the right to vote. It's the late 1940s or early 50s, I believe it was.
Wow, it was that recent. Wow, that's crazy.
You know, it really is quite recent in the grand scheme of things. You know, black men were able to vote in the right after the Civil War. Women were able to vote right around 1900. And like I said, the American Indians were the last to gain the right to vote, which is an absolutely criminal shame as
absolutely.
Far as I'm concerned.
Oh, you bet.
You know, we were the original people here. No matter how we got here, we lived here for thousands of years happily, for the most part, happily and peacefully, for the most part.
Sure.
You know, of course, there were tribal, you know, warfares between the different tribes. But, you know, that's life. It's always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
Mankind has fought since the beginning of time. Just yeah. ask Cain and Abel. Right?
Yeah, that's right. So then when you, because of this, you wanted to find out more about that history?
Well, what happened was I was about 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And at school, you know, they were talking about, you know, ancestry and stuff. And people said, oh, you got to be Italian or something or Mexican. I'm going, I don't know what I am. Scotch, Irish, and Indian is all I know. Scotch and Irish is all I know about. So I went home and I asked my mom, and she goes, yeah, you're, you know, basically Scotch and Irish, a little English. I went, oh, okay. Well, not too long after that, I started having these dreams. And I was dreaming about an Indian woman or standing on top of a hill, looking down over the hill and seeing, you know, like teepees and, you know, Indian people.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked my mom, I said, I keep having this dream. She goes, what dream? So I explained the dream to her. The third time I had the dream, my mother said, all right, you're American Indian, but don't you tell a soul. And I went, huh? She goes, you're part Cherokee Indian, but don't tell anybody. That's why you're darker than everybody else. And I went, oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Well, I disobeyed quite highly. I went to school the next day and told everybody I knew I was Cherokee. So anyway, so that's, you know, part of, you know, why it was hidden, because you weren't allowed to own land if you were Native American. You weren't allowed to vote if you were Native American. You were spit on. You were ridiculed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can say many things, but, you know, people of color have been, you know, not always looked upon in the best light.
Right.
But, you know, and I remember, I mean, I heard people talking about, oh, them dirty Indians, you know.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not really the way it went. We were cleaner than everybody else, trust me. Because that's how we actually tracked the white men back in the old days. We could smell them coming miles away.
Hmm.
And Native Americans, American Indians, we bathed every day. You had to, because if you didn't bathe every day, the animals would smell you and run away. So it was, you know, part of our culture, part of who we were. You bathe every day, no matter how cold it was, pretty much. So,
right.
Interesting lifestyle differences in, you know, cultures and the way things went. And, you know, as the things that are happening today with the disease, you know, the virus, whatever you want to call it, that's running rampant across our country. Can you imagine sitting in your village in the 1600s and the 1700s and watching your family and friends break out in red spots all over their body and dying in mass wards?
Yeah.
And whole villages being wiped out from disease? It's the same concept today.
Right.
Only now we have the benefit of TV and computers and, you know, and what's going on, you know, should anybody have been surprised that this has happened? No, it happens about every 100 years. A horrible virus runs rampant through the world and people die. It's horrible. You know, we are giving it our best attempt, I believe, at this juncture to try to quell the death rate. You know, maybe we won't lose 175 million people throughout the world to coronavirus, which is, you know, those numbers are staggering. Can you imagine? Those numbers are staggering.
It is.
Hard to even fathom those kind of things. But, you know, we're here to talk about Nancy Ward. So that kind of thought, you know, when I found out I was Native American, I went to my grandpa and I just absolutely ate up every word he had to say. You know, I remembered the stories and, you know, we would talk about it. And he goes, "You're the only one of my grandchildren that seems to be interested in our Native American side." And, you know, I just had a passion and a heart for everything Native American. Even when I was a kid, I always rooted for the Indians to win, though seldom did they. You know, I always, you know, just chalk that up to my passion at heart.
Yeah.
You know, root for the underdog kind of thing. But to know that it had a deeper meaning to me without me even understanding what that meaning was and understanding, you know, why I had a heart for wolves and swans and, you know, turquoise and anything Native American, I loved and collected all that stuff even before I knew, you know, my original, you know, ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a mutt. We're all basically mutts here. If you happen to be 100% anything, you're kind of lucky.
Yeah.
But, so I just, you know, remembered the stories that he told me, and he was proud that I was interested in the relics that he had. He gave to me when I was, 14 and 16. He had, a piece of jade that was in a ring that fell apart that had belonged to Nanyi. So he took the copper, had that melted down, and turned it into a cuff bracelet for me. And I toted that around for the next, you know, 40 years. He also had an arrowhead that she had owned and, you know, was passed down through the family. And he gave me that when I turned, I believe it was 16 or 18. I think it was 18 when he gave me that.
Okay.
And now he said, you know, "You're the only one that's interested. You know, these things are for you. These must belong to you." And he said to me something really strange. And I wished I'd asked more questions and I didn't. And I, you know, I'm sad that I didn't. But when he gave me the arrowhead, he said to me, "They always thought my mother was the one. She wasn't. Maybe you are." And I just didn't understand what he was saying to me, and I didn't question it, but I always remembered it. And then I come to find out about, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I think it was, that my great-grandmother worked for a newspaper, and she ran the newspaper, part of the newspaper, and a convenience store in a little town called Weber Falls. And so I kind of wonder if she was saying that she was going to write the story about Nancy Ward. I don't know, but I kind of like the idea. Maybe that's what he was thinking. So when I was getting separated from my husband and I closed the company that I had owned for about 14 years, you know, I just had nothing to do. And I started traveling and so on and so forth. And my cousin called me and she goes, "Hey, did you know there's a park named after our grandmother and a boat ramp in Benton, Tennessee?" I said, "No, I didn't know." And she goes, "Well, I know you're traveling. Can you go?" I said, "Yeah, well, I'm on my way to Charleston, you know." Mm-hmm. "I'm not on my way to Benton, Tennessee." So I had got a room for the night and, you know, thought about, should I go? And, you know, would I have another chance to go sometime? And, you know, when I woke up the next morning, the Lord laid it on me to go. So I did. And when I got there, I was just overcome with emotions that are really kind of hard to explain. But when I got there, it was way more than a park and a boat ramp. My grandmother, my seventh great grandmother, my great uncle, eighth great uncle, and my sixth great uncle were all buried there on top of the hill.
Hmm.
And, you know, what happened to me was like almost magical and scary all at the same time. I just, my life started to make sense to me. I understood why I loved the things that I loved and cherished the things that I did. They were all directly tied to her.
Yeah.
You know, my love for plants and trees and, you know, holistic medicines and natural medicines and herbs. The training that I had all those years made sense. That's who she was. That's where my spirit came from. That's where my DNA comes from.
Right.
And I think that once we start discovering things about our ancestors, we understand why maybe we love the things we love. Is it part of our culture or is it part of the thread of our DNA? I think it's part of the thread of our DNA. I truly do.
Yeah.
You know, depression runs, you know, rampant in the Native American family. And it's because we're a conquered people. We truly are. We were prisoners of war for decades and decades. They took our babies from us. They took our culture from us. They took our language from us. They punished us. They beat us for speaking our own words. And because they wanted to destroy the essence of who our people were.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that we managed to hang on to that in secret and private. It makes me want to cry. That my grandparents had to speak their language in secret. And thank God that we did, because, you know, look what they did in World War II.
Right,
the
right.
Indian talkers.
Yeah.
Had we not done that, we would have lost that war. We would have lost those wars because the Native Americans that had languages that nobody knew.
Yeah, right.
But those that knew them and those that could speak them. And we became important for a short, brief period of time. We became important. And to know that the last of those brave, wonderful men and women are now almost all gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's going to remember the future? You know, thank God we have languages, you know, arts in Cherokee that are teaching the young children that live there, you know, on the reservation, their culture, their language, who they were born to be. Is just, you know, it's a miracle. It truly is. The Native Americans survived the Trail of Tears, and what was done to us is nothing short of a miracle.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, glad to be able to speak for them. You know, if you looked at me, you wouldn't know if I was part Mexican, part white, part Italian, part Native American. I've been accepted, mm-hmm. you know, amongst, you know, people because they don't know what I am or who I am. For all those years, and now I have the honor and privilege of being able to speak for all Native American Indians and to tell a story about one. The way I look at it, the story of Nancy Ward and her first husband, Kingfisher, my seventh great grandfather, is one of America's first great love stories. True Americans, people that were born in this country, that lived in this country, that fought and died for this land. For who they were. I just couldn't be more proud. I couldn't be more proud of that than anything I've ever done. And I've done things in this world. This is not my first foray into, you know, being a productive citizen and raising money for charities and, you know, different things. I worked for the president of the Ohio Senate for about 14 years and took care of him so he could take care of my state, Ohio. And helped his wife. And during 9/11, I stayed there with her when her husband was locked up underneath somewhere in Ohio. He was locked in a bunker somewhere all day. She could speak to him, and she was out of her mind with worry and fear. Her daughter was right across the street from the World Trade Center that I sat and watched fall with her and held her hand as she cried. And as I cried for our nation, for our country, for our world that people tried to take away from us, you know, and almost succeeded. You know, it took a while for it to really show its ugly head what it did to our country. It took, you know, 6, 7, 8 years to, you know, show a collapse here of some sort of degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was what happened in 08 and 09, 2008 and 09. That was directly due to 9/11, directly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what anybody says. That's what happened. You know, they were trying to take us out. When they destroyed our World Trade Center, that, you know, these people, these animals that did this to us. They're animals. They're not even human. They're animals. And I don't care what anybody says. That to kill that many people, you have to be an animal. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, and what's going on now? You know, I choose to believe this was not done with intent. It's a choice. We have to choose to believe one way or another. I choose to believe this horrible virus was not done with intent.
Yeah.
You know, you listen to the TV, the internet, and it's easy to get confused.
Yeah.
It is. My heart breaks for our country. My heart breaks for the world right now.
Yeah. It's a tough time for sure.
You know, we thank God in our lifetime have never seen anything like this, and hopefully never see it again for another 100.
Yeah,
but it will happen again sometime.
Yeah.
It's bound to.
Yeah, it's not a question of if, but when for sure on those kind of things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Nate. I'm just trying to stay positive. You know, I quarantined for 21 days to come stay with my mother. Because their doctor wouldn't let me in the house unless I did.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, to keep her safe, you know, I never thought I could stay isolated for 21 days and still be sane. Holy cow, I
yeah.
hate it.
Yeah.
I've been out with her for a couple of weeks, you know. What do you do, Nate? What do you do?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you got to take the precautions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, let's talk just a little bit more about Nancy. You said that she had ties to Daniel Boone and George Washington. How did you find that kind of stuff out? And what was those ties that she had?
Okay, well, Daniel Boone is pretty – most of it's pretty well documented.
Mm-hmm.
She negotiated with the Transylvania Company that Daniel Boone was the lead negotiator for in the sale of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandmother sold Kentucky to Daniel Boone.
Oh, okay.
And they were fast friends. It's to be debated how close of friends they were.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they were very close friends.
Gotcha.
And she's really about the only woman he ever speaks about other than his wife and his daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And he said she was the most handsome woman he ever saw.
Hmm.
So, and that's a quote out of one of Daniel Boone's books.
Sure.
That he wrote, you know, or had written, you know, the biography, autobiography, I guess it was. So with that is, you know, documented in White Man's History. Now, as far as George Washington goes, she was a chief negotiator for treaties that went on when George Washington was a young soldier. And he was, you know, going to the Ohio area and Pennsylvania and different places like that. She would had been negotiating treaties with the other tribes to allow white people into those areas. So that's how she saved Daniel Boone, as close as I can document that directly. But I have family stories.
Mm-hmm.
My family stories and Native American, Cherokee to be specific, weren't written until the mid-1800s. And then, as you can well imagine, we didn't write everything we knew. So there are stories that were passed down to me through my grandfather and his brothers and sisters told me different things about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson that are pretty hard to document otherwise. We know that Thomas Jefferson negotiated with the... my family was taken prisoner hostage in a town that just right now is not on the tip of my tongue. And all the chiefs were held together, prisoner. And one of my uncles, Atakulakula, who was not in the contingency that went to powwow with the white men chief,
mm-hmm.
They were all held hostage. And Thomas Jefferson was actually able to negotiate to get my other uncle, Oconostoa, and Nancy Ward released from that place where they were being held not very long after Nancy and Oconostoa released. They killed all those chiefs, all 12 of them.
Oh, wow.
11 or 12 chiefs were massacred right after they were allowed to leave. and Thomas Jefferson was in on the negotiation of getting my grandmother out. They were very important to the colonialists. You know, the rising of the Revolutionary War was all fixing to take place right through then. And she was very good at negotiating with the Shawnee and the Delaware and, you know, all the different Indian tribes that they needed the cooperation of. And they used Native Americans for different things during that war, during the War of 1812, during the Civil War. We were also used again for different things. Even though we weren't technically considered part of it, they did manage to use our services and knowledge of the land and different things like that. So, you know, it didn't get us anything when Andrew Jackson got there, but he's the one that defied Congress and ordered our departure from our land. Now, what they did was they say I was a Native American and I held 500 acres and of land, and only 11 of those acres were tillable, usable land. Oh, and I had a gold mine. Oh, that didn't count. The only thing that my family would have got paid for would have been the 11 tillable acres, not the other 500, not the gold mine, not the silver mine, not the copper mine, any of that kind of stuff. So that's how they say they paid us. They paid us for what they chose to pay us for. And then they took that money, most of it, and charged us for the Trail of Tears, for those dispatches that took the Cherokee from one end to the other up. So, you know, it was a, a backhanded slap when you get one. So you got to take history, you got to tear it apart, you got to read, you got to know your family in order to be able to disseminate and discern what's actually correct.
Right.
And, you know, as far as Thomas Jefferson goes, we do know that Nancy Ward wrote George Washington a letter while he was president, begging for them not to take this land away from us, for us to protect it. What he did was he said that my grandmother could have her land into perpetuity for as long as time was. That didn't last either. Hmm. That land was seized by the government and the TVA and whoever you want to say, all took all that land except for that little plot the TVA owns now that my grandmother's buried on. And they gave her Chota back, which was her town that was destroyed by soldiers back in the early 1800s. And actually, the family took it to court, and it went all the way to Congress in, I believe it was 1965, trying to get those lands back for the Cherokee people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly, here about 3 years ago, the TVA gave Chota to the Eastern Band Cherokee, which is not where the Nancy Ward descendants ended up. We ended up in the Western Band, being part of Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But at least it's been that has been returned to Indian ownership, American Indian Cherokee ownership. So, you know, it gets convoluted as time goes by, and I've looked at a lot of records that date back to the, you know, 1800s and stuff that I've been able to quell out of different places. And, you know, it's an amazing journey, an amazing story. I need to get busy and write the rest of the story, but, you know, we'll see where this goes. I've been kind of holding off. You know, I don't know if there's enough demand for the rest of the story, because the rest of the story is fairly well documented in, you know, in our history of the Smithsonian and so on and so forth. Uh-huh. It was important to me to tell the story of Nanyihi, a woman of many names, and her first husband, Kingfisher, in her early life, because that's not so well documented. And I felt that I had enough to contribute to that story that it made it worth writing. And I've had a lot of people, you know, when are you going to finish? You know, when can you finish and write the rest of the story? So I've got part of one written, and, you know, every once in a while something will, you know, plop on me like as if by divine inspiration.
Yeah.
I believe God gives us the story. You know,
sure.
You ask a you know, a musician. Well, where did you get that from? Well, I don't know. I heard it in my head.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how I got this story. I just knew that I had to tell it. And, part of it, I believe, was divine intervention from my creator. And part of it is the stories that I learned from my grandparents and from his family. Part of it, things that I read, that are well documented. So I tried to combine all of that together, and somebody said, well, it's fiction. Well, yeah, it has to go down as fiction. I have no recourse there because I have no way to back up and document my family stories. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's my word against somebody else.
Yeah. A lot of it's oral tradition, right? I mean, it's a little hard to document, but
absolutely.
Yeah.
You can't document oral tradition. You can't do it. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
So, so that's how I chose to go with this book, instead of, an autobiography or nonfiction. I couldn't do it. I checked it and it wasn't it would open myself up to lawsuits and stuff. So,
sure.
You have to be careful in this day and age what you do and what you say.
Right.
So,
well, where can people find out more information about your book?
You can go on Facebook and type in Woman of Many Names. That will take you to the Facebook page for the book and for, all the interviews and so on and so forth. The book can be purchased just about anywhere online. Some Barnes & Nobles and Books A Million do carry it in the stores and, key places where this topic would be more relevant, probably.
Okay.
Amazon, pretty much anywhere you can get a hold of a copy of it. And I hope people do, read my book and support, that end of it. But, what we mostly need to do is know our own roots.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to understand where they came from and how their family got to be where they were. It might not be a pleasant story because trust me, I've got unpleasant stories too.
Yeah.
One of the Nancy Ward descendants, his name was Sam Starr, S-T-A-R-R, Bell Starr. You ever heard of Bell Starr?
Yes. Yes.
The Dalton gang. Yeah. I had ancestors ran with the Dalton gang. So,
right.
And also if you remember Will Rogers,
mm-hmm.
that's a good story. Will Rogers is a descendant of Nancy Ward.
Oh, wow.
There's been several Cherokee chiefs that are descendants of Nancy Ward. And so, as far as we can tell, there's, several hundred thousand of us out there running around that know and don't know, who they are and where they came from.
Right, right. Well, I tell you, it is. It's like you said, it's good to know our ancestry, whether it's bad or good. It's good to know our ancestry. And sometimes it can prove to be difficult. I'm in Idaho and there's a very large LDS population around here and they're very big on genealogy. And so there's a lot of resources around here that are really nice to have that we don't maybe have in a lot of other places. But, part of my ancestry is European, so it's pretty easy to trace that back. My grandmother is Mexican, and it is hard. I can only go back to her father. I don't even know anything beyond her father because it's just the records aren't there. And it was like pulling teeth to try to get my grandmother to talk about her childhood and her dad and anything like that, because she didn't want to talk about it because of the racism and things like that involved in it. So it's really tough.
Now, have you done the ancestry test, DNA?
I have not yet. I do want to do that, but I have not done it yet.
You need to do it. You will be surprised. Your relatives will come out of the woodwork and you'll be able to piece together a story that makes sense to you.
Sure.
And all of our stories are beautiful.
Yeah.
Whether they've got some troubling things, everybody's got trouble in their background.
Yep, absolutely.
Who you are.
Yep.
Unless your name was Jesus.
yep.
And even then, you've got to wonder, was there trouble there too?
Yeah.
So of course there was. Of course there was. And that's life. It's part of being alive. It's part of living. And,
yep.
Your story is beautiful. And she, like my grandpa, she should have been proud of who she was and where she came from, and they weren't.
Right.
And that is the most heartbreaking thing ever, to know that our family had to hide who they were.
Yeah, it really is.
We don't have to anymore. Those days should be over and should be behind us. And people like you and me can make that more so every single day of every single year going forward. We need to be proud of our culture and where we came from, because without that, there is no us.
Right.
Sorry. There is no us without all that.
No, that's well said.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful to me. That's just beautiful.
It is.
And then I find out my dad has some Indian in him too. Had to have been one of the Western bands. You know, I haven't ferreted out which one yet, but I think I know in my heart. And, you know, but yeah, that's something people need to know and understand. We get compassion that away. Can you imagine how many people are walking around not knowing they're part Black, not knowing they're part American Indian or Native American Indian, mm-hmm. not knowing they're part Hispanic or Mexican or whatever, or Hawaiian or anything else?
That's right.
We are. We're all much. We're much.
Yep.
I don't care what you think you know about your DNA. Don't think you know it all.
That's true. You're absolutely right.
Because when you think you do, you find out you didn't.
Yeah. And you've done, you know, as you say, you've done an excellent job of making sure that your family is not forgotten about, and specifically the story of your grandmother, Nancy Ward, and just all the stuff you found out because you have this passion to do it is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, you know, blessed that God gave me this assignment. It's what I feel. I was born to do this. And, you know, I'm the first relative to publish that I know of a book on her specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have a cousin. Her name is Becky Hobbs. She has written a musical called Nanyihi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, you know, workshopped in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Dallas, Georgia, different places. And hopefully it'll be on Broadway one of these days.
Oh, that'd be great.
Beautiful, beautiful story.
Yeah.
Pretty much from beginning to end, she chronicles, you know, in song. And it's just a beautiful musical.
Great. Well, I hope... I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's what it's called, Nanyihi, the musical.
Oh, cool. Great. Well, we look forward to seeing that. Hopefully that would end up on Broadway someday. That would be fantastic. You know, and I hope you end up writing another book, a follow-up book to this book. I think it would be a really fun thing to do. Deborah, thank you so much for joining us today. We truly appreciate your story and hearing a little bit more about the story of your ancestry and specifically Nancy Ward.
You too, Nate, and I'm glad you shared with me and the audience your background too.
Deborah Yates on Everyone Has a Story. Thank you, Deborah, for calling into the studio and sharing your story about your life a little bit and about your grandmother. What a fantastic story. If you guys want to find out any more information about Deborah or her book, you'll find all that information in the show notes. Please reach out to her. I know she would love to hear from you guys. And again, thanks, Deborah, for joining us here on Everyone Has a Story. If you would like to share your story here on this podcast, we would love to hear from you. This podcast does not exist unless we have people like you that are willing to share your story. You can find me at KNA Radio on Twitter. That's KNATRADIO. You can also reach out to me on email. That's knateradio@gmail.com. Find me on Facebook. Everybody's Got a Story. All those social platforms are available for use, and reach out to me on any of those. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to listen to you, and we'd love to have your story here on the podcast. Well, we hope you guys have a fantastic week. Look forward to talking to you next week. Until then, remember, everyone is unique. Everyone has a story. What's yours? Have a great week, y'all.
IndieBlast Podcast Network.